Chapter 68. Good, apostrophe said Monks, regarding her attentively. Go on. Apostrophe, she spoke of a young creature, apostrophe resumed the matron, who had brought a child into the world some years before, not merely in the same room, but in the same bed, in which she then lay dying. Apostrophe, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Monks, with quivering lip, and glancing over his shoulder, blood. How things come about. Apostrophe, the child was the one you named to him last night, apostrophe said the matron, nodding carelessly towards her husband, the mother this nurse had robbed. Apostrophe, in life? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Monks. In death, apostrophe replied the woman, with something like a shudder. She stole from the corpse, when it had hardly turned to one, that which the dead mother had prayed her, with her last breath, to keep for the infant's sake. Apostrophe, she sold it, apostrophe cried Monks, with desperate eagerness. Did she sell it? Where? When? To whom? How long before? Apostrophe, as she told me, with great difficulty, that she had done this, apostrophe said the matron, she fell back and died. Apostrophe, without saying more? Apostrophe, apostrophe cried Monks, in a voice which, from its very suppression, seemed only the more furious. It's a lie. I'll not be played with. She said more. I'll tear the life out of you both, but I'll know what it was. Apostrophe, she didn't utter another word, apostrophe said the woman, to all appearance unmoved, as Mr. Bumble was very far from being, by the strange man's violence. But she clutched my gown, violently, with one hand, which was partly closed, and when I saw that she was dead, and so removed the hand by force, I found it clasped a scrap of dirty paper. Apostrophe, which contained apostrophe interposed Monks, stretching forward. Nothing, apostrophe replied the woman. It was a pawnbroker's duplicate. Apostrophe, for what? Apostrophe, apostrophe demanded Monks. In good time I'll tell you. Apostrophe said the woman. I judge that she had kept the trinket, for some time, in the hope of turning it to better account, and then had pawned it, and had saved or scraped together money, to pay the pawnbroker's interest year by year, and prevent its running out, so that if anything came of it, it could still be redeemed. Nothing had come of it, and, as I tell you, she died with the scrap of paper, all worn and tattered, in her hand. The time was out in 2 days. I thought something might one day come of it too, and so redeemed the pledge. Apostrophe, where is it now? Apostrophe, apostrophe asked Monks quickly. There, apostrophe replied the woman. And, as if glad to be relieved of it, she hastily threw upon the table a small kid bag scarcely large enough for a French watch, which Monks pouncing upon, tore open with trembling hands. It contained a little gold locket, in which were two locks of hair, and a plain gold wedding ring. It has the word Agnes engraved on the inside, apostrophe said the woman. There is a blank left for the surname, and then follows the date, which is within a year before the child was born. I found out that. Apostrophe, and this is all? Apostrophe, apostrophe said Monks, after a close and eager scrutiny of the contents of the little packet. All, apostrophe replied the woman. Mr. Bumble drew a long breath, as if he were glad to find that the story was over, and no mention made of taking the 25 pounds back again, and now he took courage to wipe the perspiration which had been trickling over his nose, unchecked, during the whole of the previous dialogue. I know nothing of the story, beyond what I can guess at, apostrophe said his wife addressing Monks, after a short silence, and I want to know nothing, for it's safe or not. But I may ask you 2 questions, may I? Apostrophe, apostrophe, you may ask, apostrophe said Monks, with some show of surprise. But whether I answer, or not is another question. Apostrophe, apostrophe which makes 3, apostrophe observed Mr. Bumble, essaying a stroke of facetiousness. Is that what you expected to get from me? " demanded the matron. "It is," replied Monks. "The other question? What do you propose to do with it? Can it be used against me?" "Never," rejoined Monks. "Nor against me either. See here. But don't move a step forward, or your life is not worth a bullish." With these words, he suddenly wheeled the table aside, and pulling an iron ring in the boarding, threw back a large trap door which opened close at Mr. Bumble's feet, and caused that gentleman to retire several paces backward, with great precipitation. "Look down," said Monks, lowering the lantern into the gulf. "Don't fear me. I could have let you down, quietly enough, when you were seated over it, if that had been my game." Thus encouraged, the matron drew near to the brink, and even Mr. Bumble himself, impelled by curiosity, ventured to do the same. The turbid water, swollen by the heavy rain, was rushing rapidly on below, and all other sounds were lost in the noise of it splashing and eddying against the green and slimy piles. There had once been a water mill beneath, the tide foaming and chafing round the few rotten stakes, and fragments of machinery that yet remained, seemed to dart onward, with a new impulse, when freed from the obstacles which had unavailingly attempted to stem its headlong course. "If you flung a man's body down there, where would it be tomorrow morning?" said Monks, swinging the lantern to and fro in the dark well. 12 miles down the river, and cut to pieces besides," replied Bumble, recoiling at the thought. Monks drew the little packet from his breast, where he had hurriedly thrust it, and tying it to a leaden weight, which had formed a part of some pulley, and was lying on the floor, dropped it into the stream. It fell straight, and true as a die, clove the water with a scarcely audible splash, and was gone. The three, looking into each other's faces, seemed to breathe more freely. "There," said Monks, closing the trap door, which fell heavily back into its former position. "If the sea ever gives up its dead, as books say it will keep its gold and silver to itself, and that trash among it. We have nothing more to say, and may break up our pleasant party." "By all means," observed Mr. Bumble, with great alacrity. "You'll keep a quiet tongue in your head, will you?" said Monks, with a threatening look. "I am not afraid of your wife. You may depend upon me, young man," answered Mr. Bumble, bowing himself gradually towards the latter, with excessive politeness. "On everybody's account, young man. On my own, you know, Mr. Monks. I am glad, for your sake, to hear it," remarked Monks. "Light your lantern, and get away from here as fast as you can." It was fortunate that the conversation terminated at this point, or Mr. Bumble, who had bowed himself to within 6 inches of the ladder, would infallibly have pitched headlong into the room below. He lighted his lantern from that which Monks had detached from the rope, and now carried in his hand, and making no effort to prolong the discourse, descended in silence, followed by his wife. Monks brought up the rear, after pausing on the steps to satisfy himself that there were no other sounds to be heard than the beating of the rain without, and the rushing of the water. They traversed the lower room, slowly, and with caution, for Monks started at every shadow, and Mr. Bumble, holding his lantern a foot above the ground, walked not only with remarkable care, but with a marvelously light step for a gentleman of his figure, looking nervously about him for hidden trapdoors. The gate at which they had entered was softly unfastened and opened by Monks, merely exchanging a nod with their mysterious acquaintance. The married couple emerged into the wet and darkness outside. They were no sooner gone than Monks, who appeared to entertain an invincible repugnance to being left alone, called to a boy who had been hidden somewhere below. Bidding him go first and bear the light, he returned to the chamber he had just quitted. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.